Welcome back, listeners, to another episode. We now have the privilege to close our series on ADHD with Rabbi Dr. Barry Holzer. Dr. Holzer is a child and adult psychiatrist, as well as being a co-founder of the organization Nefesh, the International Network of Orthodox Jewish Mental Health Professionals. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome. My name is Yechiel Bressler, assistant director and therapist at Upward Community. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, the podcast where we do a deep dive into the mental health challenges confronting the Orthodox Jewish community. Join us as we identify, explore, and open up the conversation about some of the biggest struggles facing our community today.
Dr. Holzer, thank you so very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join DJ and I on this important episode.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
So if you can, for our listeners, just share a little bit about your experience working with ADHD, how you got there, what you've seen.
I really started learning about ADHD in my child psychiatry fellowship, which, believe it or not, was back in the 1980s.
I don't believe it.
What I realized is that this is a major issue that nobody knows about. And the truth is, in the 80s, back in 1990, a survey done in the U.S. showed that about 15% of ADHD was being diagnosed. That's a significant problem when, you know, I actually did my research for my fellowship was about ADHD in schools and teachers' knowledge about it. And I did a whole survey of teachers, and most of the teachers had no idea. They knew nothing about ADHD. They really didn't understand it. So I really became very much an advocate for ADHD. There used to be an organization called the Jewish Association for Attention Deficit Disorder back in the 90s, who really pushed me to open up an ADD center in Brooklyn, which I did in 1994. And I had a sort of a group practice primarily focused on ADHD. And we saw hundreds of kids, mostly kids with ADHD, many adults as well, but mostly kids, you know. But I also went on, you know, started speaking and started going out to whoever wanted to hear me to really talk about ADHD and let people know what's going on and what it was about. Until the New York Magazine article came out in probably the late 90s, early 2000s about, you know, ADD, the scariest three letters in the alphabet. Yeah. It really was not very well known.
I was always told that was ATM, but okay.
it was not really well known. People didn't understand it. They didn't know about it. By 2000, 85% of ADHD was being diagnosed in this country. So the 90s were a really major shift in what was going on. And since then, you know, we've learned so much about ADHD, and we have so many more tools to treat it that it's, you know, it's gotten, you know, it hasn't, you know, changed the basics, but it certainly has changed things significantly in terms of how we can help people.
I feel like I have to say, as a child of the 80s, who most probably likely, you know, would have qualified for a diagnosis, I'm surprised, like, my thoughts all along with that we didn't even, that nobody knew about it then. So I'm surprised already that it was known about, not surprised it took so long to become accepted. One of the things that I really enjoy is hearing kind of different people explain their take or use their examples of how to explain to a layman what ADHD is. So I would ask you, how would you explain exactly what ADHD, not exactly, how would you explain what ADHD is to someone who's not the smartest person in the room like me?
ADHD is really a neurological issue. I don't even like to call it a disorder. I think the name attention deficit disorder is all around the misnomer. Number one, people with ADHD focus just fine. Go watch a kid with ADHD building Legos or playing a video game and try to get his attention. He is super focused. He doesn't even hear you. So it's not really a deficit of attention. It is a difficulty directing attention. I can't put my attention where it needs to be, no matter how hard I try. And this is very often what happens, a problem in school, is that the kid is really trying and he's still not focused at all. And he's branded as just like he's, you know, he's not trying, he doesn't care. You know, so there's a famous book out years ago called I'm Not Lazy, Crazy, or Stupid. It's a book about ADD. And, you know, the kids were either called lazy, you know, you're just lazy. If you really tried, you could do it. And I've heard that thousands of times from teachers.
I've heard that thousands of times too.
you know, and the kid's not crazy because he's saying these things, doing these things, and he's certainly not stupid. I have kids who were brilliant. I still remember, it just came up recently, I was dealing with yeshiva years ago, and the kid had an IQ of 130-something, but had terrible ADD. And they couldn't understand. They said, well, I said, he really needs an enrichment, a gifted type program. And it's a school that had great resources and could do it. But they said, but he won't do the basic work. I said, he's not going to do the stupid work. Instead, this work is just too demeaning and boring for him. And trying to get him to do this is just like, you have no idea how hard it is. Okay. So you're asking him to do something. Whereas if you give him something challenging, he'll be very engaged. And I deal with this frequently. I just had a kid yesterday, who, is really not engaged. He just got tested last week and he has an IQ of 124, but he's really not engaged in class because he gets bored all the time. So ADD has a lot to do with, it's really a brain problem. It is the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain that has to do with focus, that have to do with filing information. It's the executive function area of the brain. It's the brain's executive secretary, underperforms. And it's interesting because in psychiatry, we have very few tests where we can tell you exactly what's going on. In ADD, we can. We have fMRIs, which are, functional MRIs that show you not just a picture of what it looks of anatomy, but actually can show you function. They use labeled carbon and, glucose. And they could show you what the brain looks like before you give it, medication, and what it looks like when you give the medication. And you see all of a sudden the prefrontal cortex that looked pretty dull, all of a sudden lights up, okay, with the medication. You can use it better because what it does is the brain works on chemical transmissions. You've got, a trillion neurons talking to each other. And in order to talk to each other, you have to release the dopamine or the norepinephrine from one neuron and get it to the other one through this very tiny synapse in between. The problem is you're not releasing enough dopamine. And what the medicine does, it turns on the dopamine spigots and pushes it out. So there's just much more available. They're talking to each other much better. That area of the brain now functions better. And so it's not a matter of the kid being better or, it's not a moral flaw. It is really a brain issue. And as far as I'm concerned, it is so common, I loathe to call it a disorder. I much rather call it is a variance. And quite honestly, if you get past school, people with ADD do great in our society. Most startups are started by people with ADD. People with ADD are very creative. From Elon Musk down to, the CEOs in Manhattan, most of them have ADD. It's not a bad thing necessarily. It does not fit with the school system we developed. Mm-hmm. Okay. The school system we developed wants kids to sit in a large classroom and really listen. And that's not how it works. Right. For these kids.
So this is like so insightful and interesting and fascinating to hear. Then I would ask, okay, so this is not, right? I think we're having some other episodes in this series as well. And both DJ and I experience and probably all of our listeners also have come to this realization of, okay, so the school system isn't tailored for the kid with ADHD. And yet the kid has to go to school, right? And so what is the path through that for success?
So I explain to all the kids I see and to the parents, my job is to make school manageable. My job is to make it easier for you to get through school. Now, I tell the kids, look, if you stop, you've stopped trying for the past 6 months already. If you don't try, nothing's going to change. You got to try. But what you're going to find when you try and you take the medicine is all of a sudden you're much more successful. Okay, because I have a lot of kids who they do great September, October, and by November, they're sinking because mm-hmm. the energy it takes to keep that up is so great, they just can't do it. They're just out of steam. So the path is to make it manageable and doable. And we do that with medication, we do that with educational supports, we do that with tutoring, we do that with whatever supports the kid needs to succeed and to thrive. Okay. Because the biggest danger is really not that the kid's not going to learn enough. The biggest danger is that the kid's self-esteem is going to get destroyed. And I tell parents all the time, I don't really treat kids so they learn. I treat kids so their self-esteem stays intact. Because when I go through, I know I'm smart, and the other kid, I'm getting 70s, and the kid next to me is getting 90s, and I know I should be getting 100s, and I'm not. I think there's something wrong with me. I have a problem. And that is much harder to fix. I can always catch up educationally. I can't. Fixing self-esteem is a tough job.
Sure. It's so amazing that you say that. I often, when I talk with schools a lot of times nowadays and I hear about bad grades, I always remind them, I go, what's our goal here? Our goal here is to raise a healthy, well-balanced, self-reliant child that will grow into a healthy, well-balanced, self-reliant adult that can then raise healthy, well-balanced, self-reliant children. I said, so our focus on how great their grades are is almost irrelevant, like you're saying, right? Like the knowledge is irrelevant. What we're really trying to do is create healthy, you know, emotionally balanced people.
Right. You know, put it this way. If I'm a really smart kid with an above average intellect, and I know I should be getting 90s, and I'm getting 78s, I don't feel very good about myself. If I'm a kid with an average IQ and I'm getting a B, I feel fine. I worked hard. I got a good, decent grade. I feel good about it. It's when there's a mismatch between what I know I should be doing and what I can accomplish that I start beating myself up. So that's what we have to really be concerned about. But it's also when kids are starting to get in trouble all the time. You have kids who are just like, I remember one guy, kid, you know, his father was in chinuch and should have known better. And his father, I know for years, has terrible ADD, is never treated. And this kid, somehow he pushed him through seventh grade, got him to an eighth grade in a different yeshiva and got him into high school. How they took him, I have no idea. It was good yeshiva. And after 3 months, they said, you got to get out of here. You know, they're kicking him out in like January. And I called up the Rosh Yeshiva and I said, you got to give me 3 weeks. Okay, that's all I want, 3 weeks. Okay, you can't kick this out. Where's he going to go now? There's no place to go. Give me 3 weeks. Kid had him pass the Gemara Bechina, took the next Bechina, got a 95. Okay. In May, he decided, you know, he's not sure this is the right place for him. He might want to go to a different yeshiva. And the Rosh Yeshiva went to him, we love you here. Why would you want to leave?
How the tables turn.
The nice thing about treating ADD is you see that magic all the time. This is not a unique story. This is a typical story. I don't get dramatic results like that when I'm treating depression and anxiety. But with ADD, getting dramatic results, not so uncommon. You don't always get them, but it happens pretty frequently.
So I want to represent those parents out there for a minute who are, you know, my kid is struggling, whatever it is, you know, ultimately comes to the point they get that first kind of either they realize or someone tells them for the first time, I think your kid should, you know, either get assessed, maybe get medicated. And now I'm like, no way, my kid is not getting medicated. It's going to ruin his chance for shidduchim. It's going to ruin his personality. It's going to, et cetera, et cetera. I mean,
he's going to become an addict.
Right. Right. Drugs. So what's your response? I would imagine if they're coming to us, then those are coming to you, or not coming to you, but coming to you, maybe their first sessions, you know? So what's the response to those parents? And what's true of that? What's, you know, is there truth in any of those concerns? And if so, what's your response?
So let's address those responses. First of all, the issue of addiction is ironic because it is just the opposite. In long-term studies, kids who've been treated for even just 1 or 2 years with stimulants have much lower rates of addiction than ADD kids who've never been treated. ADD kids, on average, have a 2.5 to 3 times greater risk of addictions to substance or alcohol than the average kid. But if you've treated your kid, that goes back to normal. Number two, ADD kids never, okay, I say 99.99% do not get addicted to stimulants because, very simply, they don't get the stimulant response that other kids get. Mm. Okay, their brains are wired differently. You give an ADD kid stimulants, they calm down. They feel more relaxed. They feel calmer. You give them more stimulants, you knock them out. They feel blah. They feel flat. Okay. And that's one of the big concerns about parents. It's like, oh, you know, you can take away his whole personality. No. We're going to, you give him just the right amount of medicine, so it helps him. without making him feel flat or different or whatever. Yes, is he going to be a little calmer or quieter? I hope so. That's the goal. I want to be able to sit in class and not blurt out constantly and not call out and not be, you know. But, you know, he's still going to be able to have the same personality. I don't want to get rid of that. In the very small percentage of cases where you can't get a good result without affecting personality, that's why you come to me and we play around with medication combinations. We use non-stimulants. We use other options. There are plenty of good ways to get a good result. And in terms of shidduchim, by the way, really not an issue anymore. Okay. I can tell you, I treat, you know, lots of Hasidim in Brooklyn. Gera Rebbe, you know, is a big proponent of ADD medicine, in large part because of this system of education he's created where they learn huge amounts of Gemara. But he's also very consistent because if you come to him with a shidduch and they're on medicine for ADD, means nothing's fine. You know, he's go ahead. As long as it's just for ADD, no problem. He doesn't consider that. So that's just one. But in general, it's gotten much greater acceptance. And people understand that is not, you know, that's the extreme maybe because their curriculum, you know, they're in late high school, they're doing 60 blot a year. But in general, if I think about what I learned in high school and what they learn now, there's just more information. They expect the kids to do better. They expect the kids to learn more. They expect them to know more Gemara. And as we increase the expectations, your relative amount of ADD is going to increase because you're shifting the goalposts on the curve. You know, life is a bell curve, and I'm moving it over to require more and more. The higher the expectations, the more kids are going to end up going over that line into ADD. Your job is to do what's best for your kid. And I try to tell parents, it's like, your issue and anxiety about medication is not a good reason that your kid should suffer. Mm-hmm. If it can help your kid, fine. Not everybody, it's not 100%, not everybody's helping medication, and medication is not the only answer. You're talking to me as a psychiatrist, you want me to talk about medication. Right. I play quarterback. I don't just do medication. I send people I send parents for behavior therapy, because behavior therapy is with the parents, not with the kid. I see a lot of kids who have anxiety as well. I send them for therapy. You know, individual traditional therapy for ADD is not really that helpful. But there are a lot of kids who are anxious, some who are depressed. There are kids who really could use coaching for their executive function issues.
Right.
Taking medicine is going to make it easier to learn that. Like, make it easier to learn anything else. It doesn't teach it to you. You still got to learn it. There are a lot of skills you have to learn. There are a lot of other things you need to do besides just medication. But medication has an important role, and we shouldn't be afraid of it. It's another tool. If it helps my kid, I'm in favor. That's my feeling. If it helps my kid, I'm in favor. And if it doesn't help them, we'll find other solutions.
Right. So listening to you speak, everything resonates very, very well with me. The thing that pops to mind is, how do you explain the kids? I've definitely seen cases in my, you know, experience that, not, obviously not from a psychiatric approach, but who are on medication and it doesn't necessarily seem to be doing it. Either they're always changing it, always tinkering it, or doesn't seem to be cutting it.
So these are most of the kids. Look, I don't get too many simple cases because usually the pediatrician writes a prescription, the kid does okay, and I never see them, and that's great.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I see the cases where the prescription, the pediatrician has been trying for a few months, and they raise the dose, they try a different formulation, nothing's working, and then they come to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because things aren't working or they're having terrible side effects or whatever's going on. So there are a lot of common reasons why things don't work. Number one is 35% of people with ADD have a diagnosable anxiety disorder. Now, when I'm an adult, it's easy for me to tell you about my anxiety. Kids don't talk about that. They don't use the term depressed. They generally don't use the term anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When a kid's depressed, he's bored. When, you know, and ADD kids are always bored. So it's like, it's hard to pull it apart. Right. And the anxiety is not always so obvious. I mean, I just had a case that I've been treating for a couple of months with the kids running away and they got a para and the para could handle the kid. And, you know, I spoke to the principal for a while and I went back and I said, we're missing something here. We didn't get this. this kid has terrible anxiety. There's a little kid. She, you know, an 8-year-old is not coming in and telling me I'm anxious, but she is reacting intensely. And every time she gets scared that she's going to get in trouble or something, she runs away. So I got to pick up on these, on the little things, because it's not always so easy, especially with the younger kids, to figure out what you're dealing with, even with teenagers. So sometimes there's another thing going on that we're not treating. And anxiety is the most common one that often we miss. So very often what happens, people come to me and, you know, I end up treating, I said, well, okay, we're treating the wrong thing first, clearly. We got to treat the anxiety first. Then we'll go back and worry about the ADD.
Hmm.
And
if I'm not mistaken, I'm sorry to chime in, correct me if I'm wrong, but do they not work almost against each other, the medications of the ADHD and anxiety?
Generally, stimulants do not increase anxiety symptoms. That's a mistake that was, you know, a theory that was gone to decades ago, that's been disproven over and over, but it's still very much around. The reality is that most kids feel calmer on stimulants. They don't feel more anxious. Stimulants can exacerbate anxiety in people with intense, you know, obsessive type anxiety, usually or OCD. It can make it worse. But for the most kids, stimulants actually calm them. They don't increase anxiety. So they're not really working against each other, really working together, but they don't cure anxiety. And it's also, that makes it also confusing sometimes, because ADD people generally are restless. They're it's hard to sit still, but their bodies aren't calm. Right. The medicine calms their bodies, but it doesn't treat real anxiety and fears and worries. And so, you know, when that's going on, you really have to treat that separately.
Yeah. One of the ways I always try to explain that as well to parents is that what I'm saying is, when I'm giving medication, it's to give them a chance to learn the behavioral skills that they need to cope with the anxiety and with whatever, you know, else is going on. Like you're saying, it doesn't get rid of any of that stuff. It gives them a chance to start to function the way that we would normally see kids kid function.
Correct.
Normally, in quotation marks.
Yes, I'd agree. It really just allows them to use their abilities. And that's what I say. I tell kids, you know, you'll see, you'll try now and you'll succeed. And when kids start succeeding, they keep going. It's very encouraging. You know, they want to keep going. They want to do well. It's self-perpetuating. You know, if it's built in reward. I studied, and this time I was able to get a good grade. I was able to finish the test. I was able to, you know, write my notes and follow the class and study the test and do well. And now I want to keep doing well. Doing well feels good.
Something that I was thinking of listening to you speak, clearly, as you mentioned, you have extensive experience. You know the community. You clearly know your field very well, because it is so nuanced, clearly, and there's so much to take into consideration. How can parents make sure that the treatment they're getting is good treatment, that they're in good hands with a psychiatrist? And, you know, like, what should parents be asking? What should parents be looking for to make sure that they're getting the appropriate treatment?
Look, I think most people who, you know, most certainly child psychiatrists out there have a pretty good idea of what they're doing. The proof is in the pudding. If my kid is doing well, then I'm probably in pretty good hands. Now, some people say, I don't like his bedside manner. He's not available enough. He's whatever complaints people sometimes have about their doctors. And, you know, sometimes they're true or not or whatever. And that's a separate issue. But if my kid is doing well, then he's getting good treatment. If he's not doing well, I don't care if he's getting good treatment. I've got to find him somebody who can help him. So to me, it's just a matter of, look, if I'm treating a kid, I don't give up until they're really doing well, okay? And if, you know, I'm treating your kid and you want to go elsewhere, I'll just tell you, okay, make sure I'll give you names and I'll tell you good people to go to. Don't waste your time going to somebody who is less skilled. If your kid's really up, because look, we deal with kids also. Remember, every kid with on the autistic spectrum has pretty much 98% of them have ADD. A lot of them come in just with an ADD diagnosis, and they really have other stuff going on. So just having ADD doesn't mean I've covered all my bases. Very often there's other stuff that's happening that we need to address and treat as well. So I need to make sure that I'm addressing all the issues, the academic issues, the social issues. I mean, I have a lot of kids I send for pragmatic language therapy, which is, you know, a specific area of speech and language that deals with conversational skills and social skills taught by speech and language therapists, not by not by social workers or psychologists. I'll send kids for therapy for anxiety all the time. I'll send kids to group therapy, whether it be for social skills. I send kids for DBT, for more emotional regulation. You got to cover all your bases and make sure your kid gets whatever they need. Because the one thing you have to remember is treatment works, and early treatment works better. And even the kids with most severe issues, if you get them enough therapy, enough treatment early enough, a lot of them get much better results. So just be an active parent and make sure your kid is really doing okay. If your kid's doing okay, you're doing a good job. And if they're not doing okay, then we got to find answers. And leave no stone unturned until you find the answers. And sometimes it's hard.
Okay, I want to be respectful of your time. This is extremely, extremely insightful and appreciated.
Right. Look, you got a few more minutes.
I was almost thinking, I can't think of a better ending than with that message of help your child. And leave no stone unturned and trust the doctor, right? Trust the quarterback that's been, you know, studying and focusing and knows all about this. You may know your kid better, but the doctor knows how the brain works better.
Right. But look, I trust parents and I listen to parents. And I think that's one of my greatest skills is that I really listen to a parent. And if the parent is feeling like there's a problem, there's a problem. You have to take you want to talk to somebody who takes you really seriously. And if you know your kid's having a problem, don't let anyone tell you they're not. If you know your kid needs help, find someone who'll give them the help they need. That's all. Trust yourself. You're the best advocate, and you're the one who knows your kid better than anybody else. So you want to find a professional who can really guide you on how to get the help you need, but you trust that you know what your kid needs, that your kid needs something, and have professionals just help you figure out what that is. I hope that helps out whoever's listening.
Yeah, no, it is extremely helpful. We get requests and clients and requests and lots and lots of conversation around, you know, Chicago is no different, right? That we all are dealing with. This is one of the major, major issues. And to have someone like you who is, you know, we didn't even get to talk about your communal work. I know, you know, through Nefesh and the like, and how you are making an impact in the firm community. But really, it's amazing, amazing that we have resources like yourself. And just thank you for this time, this information, and for all that you're doing for our children.
My pleasure. Great speaking to you. Take care.
You too. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Mental Health Matters. Keep an eye out for the next episode as we continue the conversation about the mental health topics that you need to know. Don't forget to subscribe so you can make sure you catch every episode. See you next time.